This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the podcast, we're looking at the evolution of Vanderpump Rules, analyzing how much the Vanderpump world has changed, but also stayed the same, while the stakes continue to get higher around the show. Our guest today is Bridget Reed, who was one of my older brother Tucker's really good friends growing up in DC, and currently works as a features writer at New York Magazine. But back in the fall of 2018, she was working for Vogue.com, where she profiled the entire cast of Vanderpump Rules at the time, spending 2 days with them as they prepped for and filmed their season 7 intro sequence. You know the one, the slow-mo, the glam, the moving cast portrait, all set to "These are the best days of our lives." She was there, and she saw it happen. And that piece helped level up some of the coverage that Vanderpump Rules and subsequently other Bravo shows could get. Nowadays, it's common to see Bravo featured in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and Vogue and Vanity Fair, but it was more rare even just 5 or 6 years ago. And she also did that profile at one of the first inflection points for the show. It was at the time when TomTom had just opened and they no longer had to pretend that they worked at Sir, which was a big deal. And that was a big shift in the evolution of Vanderpump Rules at the time. So 5 or 6 years later, we are kind of going through another inflection point. And so this is a great time to have Bridget on. Ahead of my conversation with Bridget, both of us reread her original Vogue piece from back then. And after I asked her to reflect on the experience of writing it and what stuck with her from that time, we used it as a jumping off point to compare and contrast where the cast was then and where they are now, how the show has evolved in the years since, how the Valley in some ways represents what has always felt like the inevitable next step for the cast, but in a much less natural way than we might have expected back then, and more. We talked about the effects of the pandemic, the racial reckoning, social media, the lack of a blueprint for a long-running show like this that becomes the cast's lives starting in their 20s, and how some of them have done a better job than others at creating an off-ramp for themselves from the show. We also discussed Stassi's firing and turning down the Valley, Kristen and Jack's coming back to Bravo, Ariana's post-Scandoval position, and much more. It was a really big picture conversation that made me think really hard about Vanderpump Land, as Bridget coined in her Vogue piece, and it's gotten me even more curious, honestly, about how the show will choose to move forward after this current season. Two notes before we get to my chat with Bridget. The first is that I have linked to her original Vogue story in the show notes of today's episode, in case you want to also go back and read it. It's a link that takes you behind the paywall because, for some reason, the article doesn't load when you use the original URL that pops up in Google. And the second is that I'm very excited to share that you can hear me on the latest episode of Vanderpump Rules star Sheena Shea's podcast, Shenanigans, alongside former Summer House star Hannah Berner, which is also out today. So go check that out if you want more of me and Pump Rules for your weekend. Anyway, keep listening for my discussion about the evolution of Vanderpump Rules with New York Magazine's Bridget Reed, And please make sure to take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. Okay, today we're gabbing with Bridget Reed, who is a features writer at New York Magazine. Bridget and I have known each other for like 20 years, and our paths crossed again several years ago at the first ever BravoCon in the fall of 2019. The year prior, Bridget wrote a landmark piece of Bravo press in the form of an epic profile of the Vanderpump Rules cast for Vogue. And I'm excited to look back at that piece with Bridget today and use it as a jumping off point to reflect on how much has changed in Vanderpump land, as Bridget coined in her piece, in the 5 years since, and how much has also not changed. Bridget, thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm so good, Gibson, except that you're dating us because you've said we've known each other for 20 years. And, you know, we're only 22, 23. So that's impossible.
We know each other since we were babies.
No, I'm delighted to be revisiting. Landmark piece is such a incredibly, it's an compliment. Thank you so much.
I mean, I'm not making that up, because if you recall, so at that first BravoCon 2019, right before the pandemic.
What a time. There was probably so much COVID everywhere.
So much COVID in the air. And like, I just remember like going, we were kind of going around that weekend together a lot, and like kind of backstage, front of house, all these things. And pretty much all of our friends on the Bravo PR team were like, oh my God, like this is Bridget who wrote the Vogue piece about Vanderpump Rules. Like you could just sense the excitement around that piece. And like, I feel like up until that point, there hadn't been that much sort of like, leveled up, upscale coverage of Bravo and of reality TV in that way, in Vogue of all places. So like, I'm curious to start it off, like, did you sense that like it was a big deal for Bravo to have this placement and this big profile in Vogue? And like, did you feel that when you were doing it?
Yeah, I think it was. Well, so Sally Singer, who was the editor of Vogue.com at the time, was a huge Vanderpump fan. And Sally just has such a like vision of how do we make this, like you said, not just a piece of media, but like bring it to this whole new level. So Sally was the one that was like, we have to get like an amazing photographer. And that was Daniel Arnold, who does like street photography. He's incredible. He, you know, for Vogue, for the Times, he's like a real artist, and doing like a big blowout 5,000 word piece. She wanted to do it because the pairing of Vogue and Vanderpump was like I remember the Vulture headline, because I didn't work there yet. And when they aggregated it, they were like, it's trash art. And that was exactly what we were going for.
So yeah,
it was a big deal. And yeah, I think, you know, when Housewives and Bravo first started, like media was so different, right? So it's like 2004, 2006. Like, I remember, you probably remember this, that it was like Kyle, Jill, Vicky, like the Housewives had like, was it a Rolling Stone package or something?
There
or maybe
something.
Variety.
Yeah.
Not a cover. We would have liked, the ladies should have gotten a cover, but yeah, they had like a big glossy, but that's like a different generation of media between then and now. And I feel like this was the first like sort of new generation of like, what does a big New York Times story look like? What does a Vogue story look like? And no, there hadn't been a Bravo story like that. So yeah, I think it was a big deal.
It was. And I feel
and
like
that
since
BravoCon
then
was crazy.
Yeah, that BravoCon was crazy. But I feel like since then, it's not abnormal to see similar pieces. Like, I feel like, you know, we've seen, you know, people get profiled in the New York Times, and they've been back on Vogue.com and things like that. And like, I just think it opened up the sort of pathway for them to like pitch their talent and their shows in like a different way almost. And like, I understood why they were so excited about having you in the building. I really did.
It was fun. You know, I tried again with Summer House a few years ago. I wanted to go follow Summer House filming in the Hamptons, because now I work, I was at Vogue, and then I went to The Cut at New York Mag. And now I primarily write about real estate and housing for Curbed at the magazine. So we really wanted to like do a like town and gown kind of thing with like the Hamptons neighbors, like, you know, because a few summers they've had like, you know, lists of places they can't go. And like, that would have been really fun. And they said no. But maybe
what? Bravo said no.
Bravo said no.
Got it. Yeah.
Because it is so tense, the film.
And it's so tense. And also it's like that's a big peek behind the fourth wall from like the production standpoint, probably. Yeah. Which is very interesting. I would love to see that piece at some point.
Brian Moylan would have been so jealous if I was around Kyle Cook in person. That's just a private reason for doing it.
Okay, so Bridget, your piece followed the cast that they prepped for and filmed the season 7 intro main title. So you were with them for basically 2 days. It was October 2018. It was also at sort of an inflection point for the show. Tom had just opened. Tom and Tom had gone into business with Lisa. It was sort of the beginning of them not pretending to work at the restaurant anymore, which was, again, a big change for the show. Did that also feel like to you like a optimal time to do this for that reason? Like the show was also sort of in a transition phase of its own?
Yes, definitely. And it was also, it's hard to look back and remember that Vanderpump was also sort of the first show of its kind,
right,
where it wasn't Housewives and it was younger people. Like this, it's pre-Summer House. It's Shaw's was around, but Shaw's is like its own unique beast.
Yes.
You know, pre-Family Karma. Like, so it was the first show that was like, wasn't about Housewives, right? And then also, yeah, that it had reached this, media people were like suddenly tweeting about it with the pasta. And that was when we were, all of us watchers in the media were like, wait, you know, we need to get on this, because it was, yeah, starting to like come out of just the regular Bravo viewership in a way that really no franchise, I don't think, had beyond Housewives. Like there wasn't another franchise on Bravo, like maybe Top Chef and Housewives, and obviously, you know, Project Runway and older shows, but like this sort of like new generation of Bravo.
Yeah.
And this was, Vanderpump is the first show that's like the like family tree show, right? That like came from another show, the first spinoff to like really, if we're not counting like Bethany. So yeah, I mean, it was an inflection point for the show. They were starting to become really famous and that was really wild. And they were kind of guinea pigs, honestly. They, you know, some of them had started the show. They're in their early 30s. They've been doing it now since their early 20s. And like, that's your adulthood. You know, they had spent their whole adulthood in the show. And so now that we're 5 years later, yeah, it's wild to watch. But yes, it was definitely an inflection point where they were like, oh my God, Vogue's here. And they right. kind of couldn't believe it. And I kind of couldn't believe it. Daniel, who'd never watched the show, was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was fun. It was fun.
And you could almost sense in rereading it, like, it seemed like they were being their natural selves, but also like they knew you were with Vogue. And it was like there was this element of that I think I could sense from them, like sitting down with a Vogue writer at brunch and like speaking to you, and like that just it, you could feel that element of it, you know what I mean? And them sort of trying to impress you a little bit.
Yeah, I think, and some of them, and everyone was so different. They were very genuine and came off like they do on the show. Like Stassi was just like, oh my God, you could see why when she was like 18 or whatever she was on, you know, Amazing Race and then that other
right.
show, because it's like, oh my God, this person is like simply born for television. Get the fuck out of her way. Sort of terrifying, but like very beautiful, very Regina George. And like Katie was so chill and cool. And I was like, okay, if I was gonna like go get a beer with someone, it would be Katie. Sandoval was on it. Like in terms of for like performing for a person, he definitely was the one that was the most sort of like, honestly, like PR, doing his own PR for the show.
I believe
you
it.
Know? And Jax was just this like, oh my God. It was like he was on an ATV as a person. You know, he's just like barreling through life. And you're just like, oh my God, your blood pressure. Like just, he just was like, he was so intense in a way that makes a lot of sense now. They didn't like the photos. That was a big thing, because I think they thought they would be more Vogue-y, the women.
Got
especially.
It. But they were more like BTS, like sort of harsh lighting a little bit.
Yeah. And they definitely weren't super flattering in a Vogue way, right? They weren't these like gorgeous Annie Leibovitz photos. They were trying to get a vibe, and some of them did not like them, and I felt bad about that. But I hope looking back they can see that.
How
having
did you find
a,
that out?
Yeah. Our dear friend Paige from Bravo, who doesn't work there anymore, but she's so good at her job and like
yeah.
was basically my like partner on the ground the whole time. Yeah, I just we talked about it and I sort of knew that was going to happen because yeah, I think they were expecting different photos. But I hope looking back they can see how amazing it is to have like a Daniel Arnold photo. You know, you can go see him in a gallery and like buy his book and you can say, you know, that man took my picture.
He shot me. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, okay. What I said earlier, you know, what struck me about this was like how much has changed since then, but also like fundamentally it's pretty much similar kind of, you know, relationships in this cast. So there's this quote that you say, you're at brunch with Brittany, Katie, and Stassi. And you say, between the three of them, two of them had shared a partner, two of them had fallen out. In the real world, not to be confused with the reality world, they might have never had to see each other again. Instead, inconceivably, they were best friends. And that can sort of be applied to any three people still on the show right now. But I feel like, you know, part of this inflection point we were talking about when you profiled them is that I think in the years since, more and more, the show has leaned into sort of that element of it, with also paired with embracing the fact that they are famous, that they are reality stars. And they're still this group of people, but their jobs have changed and their prominence has changed. What do you make of sort of that evolution of the show? And like, you know, this core DNA is really remaining the same, is that they're very messy people who have interconnected relationships, but they lean into the reality TV-ness of it now.
Bill Langworthy, who is the Vanderpump lead producer, I think, and also comes from like The Hills and The OC. He has a quote in that piece that's similar. That's like, he calls it the "I hate you, but please come to my birthday party" problem, which is across all Bravo shows, right? Which is this idea that, you know, and we're seeing it now in Potomac. There's so many franchises that are like strangled by these interpersonal fights that in the real world you would be allowed to like leave the situation. And the show has just become such a platform for these people that they won't leave. And I feel like that's really sort of like, when I wrote that piece, the Vanderpump cast were just really starting to enjoy the fruits of their labor, you know? And now 5 years later, yeah, they have this platform. At the same time, not all of them have broken out in a way where they can leave. And I think that tension is like absolutely underlying nearly every element of the show right now. And I think they're just such an interesting example, because I feel like Bravo really hasn't figured out how to like exit this kind of situation. And they don't really know how to do it either. And even the way influencers make money has changed so much in 5 years, and the pandemic and like TikTok. And there's so many more ways that they can just like monetize the shit out of this. So they're incentivized not to leave even more now. So yeah, I feel for them, honestly, because I think that that's really hard. And I think the show encourages you, honestly, not to have a real job. And so then you're like, this is my job. And of course, you know, I would feel trapped. I would feel panicked. You know, if I was like, what am I without this? And I think it is actually incredibly unique to this cast, because they were at that age when they started, right? Like the housewives are older. They could have a career, or their partners have a career. And I do think this is like, they were guinea pigs in a lot of ways. And I think the summer house people, even just coming a little after them, have learned like, how do I, like Kyle, so good at like, let me actually make a business.
Paige DeSorbo's done a really good job of that too.
Yes. They're like, we need an off ramp. I don't want this to control my life. And I think we're seeing Vanderpump that it is controlling their lives. And I think that that's fascinating and a little painful.
Right, right. I feel like the biggest friction on the show right now in 2024 is we're seeing Lala and Sheena kind of agree to move forward with Sandoval and kind of embrace those connections again for the sake of the show. That's sort of the writing on the wall of like, we're doing this to like keep the show moving forward. This is our cash cow. This is our central vehicle. But the friction is with like Ariana and to a lesser extent Katie, who don't really want to do that. They don't want to sacrifice their own personal boundaries and mental health and, you know, reignite some sort of relationship with Sandoval or Schwartz just for the sake of moving it forward. But that's like, that's coming to a head, I feel like, because those are two different approaches to this. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like someone did report that like one of the producers did have like a meeting right before the season.
It was in the Sandoval New York Times profile.
Right. Yeah. Right. That you guys will not be ignoring this man. Sorry. You know? And I think that that's also something that is informing like the play in ways that we don't know. And I, you know, I really think Sheena and Lala are kind of on one right now. Like I think that they're taking it a little too far, but I do think that if some of them were encouraged to do this for to keep their jobs, like that's something that is really significant. And the fact that we can't talk about it is also must be really frustrating. You know, and then at the same time with Ariana, like I understand her being like, why, what the fuck are you guys doing to me with
right.
this? So you can sort of see both sides.
Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, totally. I think that's what's happening. There isn't a ramp right now for all of them.
There isn't. And it's interesting because Ariana has the biggest ramp right now. And I kind of have this hunch that she'll take that ramp because she's going to be hosting Love Island. And that's going to probably coincide with Vanderpump Rules filming. But, you know, she has this ramp, but she got that ramp because of something catastrophic that happened to her life that like broke the entire like pop culture industrial complex basically last year. Like it was everywhere and everybody wanted a piece of that pie. And she got the biggest piece of the pie, but she also had her entire personal life blown up as a result of that. And it's sort of like, it's interesting that like people are clinging to the show within the, like the cast members are clinging to the show. And I'm guessing some of them are kind of in the back of their mind, subconsciously kind of hoping for a similar moment for themselves where it's like not for their personal lives to be blown up, but like, how can I be the person at the center of the biggest story in pop culture? You know what I mean? And then like capitalize on it. And like, I think Ariana's really smartly monetized it and capitalized on it, but it's like, they all want a piece of that pie. I don't know. It's this weird mindfuck.
Yeah. And I think it is a mindfuck. And it is, again, like just so unique in ways that like we won't understand until the reality TV dissertations of the future are written. And I like can't wait for those academics, wherever they are, Oxford, give it to us. Right.
Put it out there.
Right. I want them to. It's so different. For example, like Survivor and Real World and Real World Road Rules, like you and I grew up with reality stars. Like that's not different.
Right.
But there wasn't social media and there wasn't the same like incentive to like have that be who you are, your identity, your job, your source of income. Like a lot of those people either stayed on the competition shows or they went back to their regular lives.
Right.
And I think that, and you know, the Below Deck like franchise still keeps that a little bit. They still are working, and that's because they don't give them the platform over and over again, like these people. Mm-hmm. Vanderpump was so specific in what it gave these people and at what time. And then, you know, Bravo doesn't control what happened at that time. What year did the show debut? Let's see. I can't do math.
Probably like 2013, like probably 2012, around that time.
So that's like peak, like social media has become ubiquitous in a way that we're all using it, and then the monetization starts. Right. So that's like sponsor content. They are prime for that to boom in a way that like no one else was at that age where they haven't had careers yet. And so these people are yoked to the show in a way that I think across reality TV, like no one else is. And that is just like not being talked about enough. And I don't think Bravo loves talking about it because it does break the fourth wall so significantly, but like it's informing everything. It's informing the Valley because it's like they created a generation of reality stars that like won't leave.
They came back after being like defamed and fired. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And they're like, I'm sorry, but like they're so desperate for, and not in the like sort of petty way, but like in a very literal way, like they need this income. Like the world has changed. Like everything's so expensive. They have kids and it's like, they want this. They don't, what else are they going to do?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I want to work our way to the Valley via one of the other biggest differences to me is, you know, reading your piece and then thinking about where we are now is the absence of Stassi, because at that time, Stassi was the sort of kingpin of Vanderpump Rules. She was the one who started the podcast early. She sort of started playing the field in terms of she was going to get a spinoff show with Bo, like when she was getting married and stuff. Like she was playing the field in that way, I think, before a lot of them were. She had all like the basic branded whatever all that stuff was and like
genius,
she was doing a good job of that and then obviously and she said I feel like the show could go on for 15 more years like the way the Kardashians do. The Kardashians are because they're a family and we are a family, but we chose our family. We're still doing the same shit. That's the only reason the Kardashians keep going, because they have to. And like that, I think that quote is so prescient, but it's also really rich that she's also chosen not. Well, at first it was not her choice. She was fired from the show in 2020, but she was offered the Valley and she turned it down. So she has sort of like rejected this paycheck, this opportunity, this platform, as they say. And what do you, I'm curious what you think of that. You were in the belly of the beast with her for a moment in time. And like, she has clearly moved on and she's doing fine. You know what I mean? She's doing fine without this show, but it's not like that was a smooth ride for her.
No, I mean, I think she's written about, you know, how that felt. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's so like that quote is really funny because I think at the time the vibe was so high mm-hmm. on that, you know, that they wanted to, you know, Katie was being DM'd by Rihanna. It was like, this is going to go on forever. And then real life does get in the way. And I think what she learned is that in a reality show where you're playing yourself, like you can fuck yourself, you know, like, yeah. Her, what they did, which was abhorrent, her behavior, Chris's behavior, like all of them, like they sort of wrote their own downfall. And I do think the level of your attachment to the platform, sort of like what we learn from that is it kind of predict the fallout for you, right? So Stassi was smart. She's incredibly personable. Like she's so magnetic. Like you can tell why she's really successful.
Of course.
You know, she is a little scary, like I said, but people like that. So, you know, she was smart in that she was already sort of like building an audience on her own, a Stassi audience, right? Kristen and Jax didn't really have that. And so I think that Stassi being able to walk away from that is something that a lot of them probably really wish they had. And I think that unfortunately, it also creates this perverse kind of like situation where when the network does have to address something, like that, there's this incredible resistance to give anything. Like those people did not want to admit anything for a long time.
Mm.
And everyone was sort of like, Bravo's overreacting, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, it's ratcheted 10 times higher when this is their livelihood. This is everything to them, you know, and they can't walk away. And so Jax and Kristen kind of like bubbled along the surface and now have come back. And I think that they're doing that out of necessity in a way. And yeah, I just think Stassi being able to say no to that is like just a huge indicator of like the various paths you can take with this. And I don't blame her for saying no. Like she has so much more control. You know, they don't have control.
Yeah. And she knows she got high on her own supply, you know, and then she kind of just like, she has it figured out now. I think she's fine, but I don't know. The whole thing is really wild. And you even said in the piece, you were like, is there going to be Vanderpump Baby? It's Vanderpump Grandkids. And it's like, well, we're kind of there now. We're at the Valley. And to me, like, you know, I guess we couldn't have predicted like what the Valley, like 2 years ago before we had heard about the Valley, before that was a thing. I couldn't have predicted that like this is what it was going to look like, or they were going to like center a show around Jax, Brittany, and Kristen and have like some new faces in, but then like still mm-hmm. Vanderpump Rules, mm-hmm. still people on Vanderpump Rules who could easily be on the Valley because they're at that same stage of their life and live in the Valley.
Yeah.
How does the current iteration of like the next level, how does that compare to what you sort of thought it might look like?
I have a question informationally because I don't know, despite my, you know, deranged mental illness level of paying attention to all this. Was the Valley greenlit pre-Scandoval, or was it being talked about and then it was greenlit post?
I think it was being talked about. I think that it started to come to be before the firings happened. I think there was that sort of that season, like, wasn't a great season. It was like a totally overblown cast with like a lot of new people thrown in, like that Max guy, that Danica person, that's where Charlie came around. And I think the plan was to kind of split into two shows at that point, but then the pandemic and the racial reckoning happened, and then they fired Stassi, Kristen, and Jax. So I think that plan got put on the back burner. I think it was going to be called like Vanderpump Valley, and that was going to be the rumor is that the long kind of simmering rumor is that that was the plan, and then they revisited it because of Scandoval and the popularity and like the zeitgeist moment they had.
Yeah. So, and I think that that's what makes it so different from what we thought it was going to be, right? Because instead of it being more organic, I think it does feel super forced in a way, because it came out of this moment of like capitalize on his popularity, like, right now. And I think that Jax's, like, bar feels that way, in that it's, like, a covering over a patio. I think, you know what I mean?
Like, you said it, yep.
It feels just very, like, hastily put together.
I agree with you.
And I think that that is what is making it a little sweatier than, like, the dream, where they all just age together beautifully and, like, sort of, like,
yeah,
walk into the sunset. And so that's why you have the awkwardness of, like, Vanderpump's still going, like, because this show's so new. And, you know, they all seem to be friends on the Valley. Like, it seems like an organic group of people, but just, like, the need for the show, the impetus to make it, feels quite like it came out of an executive suite. And so that's why it's, like, the fact that Brittany and Jax are separating,
mm-hmm,
and, like, we're finding out now, like, backdated, like, how bad it's been, like, for years between them. The idea that they go on a show together with their child is, like, to me, if I was Lori K PR, their PR woman, who they always tag on Instagram, that's why I know who she is, I would be like, off ramp. Like, if I was a reality coach, I would be, that is the number one, like, advice I would give anyone, is, like, create something else so you don't have to, like, you know, stay. This is not, yeah, so this doesn't become a cage for you.
Right. I almost feel like Jax and Brittany, maybe that was part of their plan to create that off ramp, but then the rug got pulled out from under them because of Jax's own behavior. So they got pushed out of the show. And then I kind of think, I mean, like you said, we've learned about all these issues they've been having for years, but they were a more valuable prospect to this show and the potential spinoff as a couple. I think you stick together as a unit for that reason. You get the show, you film the show.
Yeah.
Season two is about the separation, and that's, mm-hmm, you know.
And all of those, like, you can get real philosophical about it.
You can.
You know, I'm still going to watch, but we are on year 20 almost of, like, Real Housewives of Orange County to now, right? This behemoth Bravo verse. And there are real people in them. And we are only starting to understand, I think, some of the impact that this has on people as human beings. And that's informed part of the, like, reality union conversation, which I think had the worst spokesperson for it, but, like, made
the worst points. Yeah.
The worst. Yep. Everyone go read my colleague.
It was about her. It was about her
piece about Bethany.
Oh yeah. That was a great, great profile about Bethany.
So yeah, I think that the incentives of the network, the incentive of being on the show, just how the economy has changed since 2004. You know, when these people, you will go back and watch a show, it is a real estate show. They're all fucking selling real estate. They're all in, yeah, this, like, real estate bubble before the housing crash. Then the housing crash happens and they're all, like, broke. You know, that it was a show about aspirational wealth. Now, Bravo is about wealthy people. Like, you can't really be aspirational. We saw it with, like, Monica. Like, that was different because she was like, I don't have this. Now you really are expected to look a certain way, have access to glam. Like, that is all so different. So these people are, like, trying to access a level of wealth that is very difficult now to do in a job that isn't like this, that isn't in entertainment. Like, you know, if you're not a lawyer, if you're not a doctor, if you don't have, like, an advanced degree, and even then it's very hard to, like, live in these, mm-hmm, cities, to have children. So just all of that, like, bearing down on this group in their 30s, maybe I'm, like, relating too hard, but it's like, how are they going to do it? You know?
Well, I think that's part of the initial appeal of Vanderpump Rules and why it broke out, is because they lived in shitty apartments and they were relatable in a certain way because they were millennials, or older millennials. And, like, some of us could see ourselves in them in certain respects. And, like, you know, they've since leveled up since then. Like you said, they're sort of playing catch up or trying to keep up with the Joneses in a way that I don't know how sustainable it is. But, like, they are genuinely relatively rich people who can afford multi-million dollar homes, and, like, they bought them. And so, like, sometimes I think about, you know, you'll see people sometimes comment on social media or tweet or whatever, like, okay, when are they going to put, you know, Lala on Beverly Hills? Or when are they going to put like Lindsay on New York? And it's like, well, I actually think that it's almost like a generational thing where like as millennials, like it's like it's kind of like an unattainable thing to like get to where our parents were to buy property and to like, you know what I'm saying? And like, I just don't know how much people like that would totally fit in with the Real Housewives cast, because there's that line. There's that like glass ceiling of Bravo reality TV. And it's like, I don't know. I think about that a lot because I'm like, as much as this cast has like evolved and like, you know, gained wealth and leveled up parts of their lives, they still have to maintain this like youthful thing and this like sort of element of like being the younger show and the younger people, and like, but like they're getting into their 40s, and it's just, I don't know, there's another point of friction that I think about a lot.
Right. And that's what I mean, is like for us to remember as an audience that like they're sort of figuring it out as they go, right? That like there's not a blueprint for like, maybe Housewives has a blueprint, but like 2Gen, the like second generation of where Vanderpump is, does not have a blueprint that's done. Mm-hmm. And we haven't, we don't know where everywhere that that can go. And I think that that's, it's easy to forget because it's just like everything is the network and it's sort of slick and shiny, but like everything is real. Like we saw from Scandoval, like that was, they can't control everything. So I think that that's something to remember about it. But yeah, I mean, I think the first like second generation millennial Bravo person to go on a Housewives show would be like, it would be like,
it's going to happen at some point. You know, it
is something. It's like, what? It's going to be crazy.
Okay. If you were to pick one person that would, that could make that leap, who would it be? Cause I have somebody in mind, but I'm curious.
Oh my God. Well, would it be Lala or Sheena? I mean, they would die. That's what they want.
I think Lala was sort of on that track. I don't know if she is anymore. There's something.
Yeah.
I think she's sort of committing to the bit on Vanderpump Rules. Yeah. I kind of think it could be Paige from Summer House going on to New York. Oh,
that would be incredible. But I also just,
I
like,
could see
want
her with
a Bryn. Paige and Craig,
I don't know,
show.
But then Craig could be the sort of prominent spouse on Real Housewives of New York City in season 17.
That would
be
amazing.
That's my idea.
I would watch that. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
But Bridget, like, I sort of, as you've been watching these shows for just as long as I have, and like we're at this, I think it's sort of another inflection point for the show. It's like, it's the post Scandoval fatigue. Like, what are they going to do after this? You know, and like, it's going to continue, but like, how do you want them to continue? Do you want them to continue to break the fourth wall and lean into being, into showing their lives as like career reality stars on the show? Or do you want it, do you want more people to graduate into the Valley and then like revamp Vanderpump Rules to go back to its origins? Like, what do you think is like, the best path?
Oh my God. Well, right. It's like, what's the best path for their well-being and their mental health and their physical health?
And
what's the, what's the best for us? I think that breaking the fourth wall is, everyone is enjoying that a little more. And I think that that's what made the Scandoval, the revisit when they put the cameras back up, like so powerful. But I do think this network needs to figure out how to really let people go. I think that that is a problem. That is the inability to really cut people off for certain shows is showing. And like I said earlier, they have no problem with Below Deck. Like, bye-bye. You know, it's like a very different show. Like, there is kind of a class hierarchy in Bravo itself. And that is where it comes out. And I think on this higher end, there's just like this. And Miss Vicky Gumbelson is like the number one example of someone who just, they can't quit. Her, I think she can't quit them, and it's just like, you know, so awkward. Like, and Dorinda is another one that's like, just release this woman, release her, you know, like let the mouse go, you know. And I think that for Vanderpump,
they love it. I do love this sort of log line of like, it's the sort of the modern soap opera where you follow these people long, and like, they're in our lives, you know. And I understand there's like a point where like that has to end.
Stop.
But like, not end in like the morbid way, just sort of end and sort of like, it's natural to move on.
Yeah, the story is over. The story finishes. You know, I think the Vanderpump story, I think the story could come to an end, which doesn't mean that those people can't go to different places and that they don't have their own personal platforms. Like, I can watch Sheena's vlog until I'm old and decrepit. But like, I do think this story of these people who met as waiters in Los Angeles in 2013 can reach a point of like, boop, we're done here.
Right.
And that would be okay. And it's like, how does Bravo figure out how to like make that
tied up with a bow? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know what that would represent by proxy? Would represent a phasing out of Lisa Vanderpump, who is a very lucrative and popular person that we've been following for 15 years. So that's another element of it. I don't know. It's like, but obviously her being involved in these people's lives is far-fetched at this point.
But so see, it's Lisa sort of like, Lisa gets her other shows though. Lisa can go on Hulu. Like she has a lot more power and a lot more control.
Okay, that's true.
I haven't seen it. But I'm just saying like, maybe that's something is like, they can loosen their contracts a little bit so that they can like flourish elsewhere so that they can build some of these relationships first. Like maybe there are ways. I feel like we're talking about like animals or something that are like being taken out of the farm and like put to pasture. And I don't mean it to sound like that.
No. I know. I think it just, well, it's like, I think it's like they are real people, obviously, and these are their lives, but this is also a business. And it's also like they're all of their livelihoods. And it's, as you said, it has to evolve. And like, there is no blueprint, especially for this show. So.
Well, and I think we're seeing a lot now with couples, like, with Ariana and Tom, with Jackson Brittany, even with like Kyle and Mauricio, the like economic incentive to stay together and the ties that bind because of these shows, like that's, are they talking about like Bravo checks and therapy? Cause like, that's what I would be talking about.
They should be.
They should be. So I think that that's like, the shows are going to keep evolving. Right. And I think that's what like we're learning. And like with Summer House with Kyle and Lindsay, like they did not go the distance, for better or worse. I feel like both would say better, but like there's a world maybe a few years ago where they would have stuck it out for the check.
Yeah. And last thing about that, and then we can wrap it up, is like, you think about Kyle Mauricio, and it's like, they could have, if she had decided to leave the show 2 or 3 years ago, they could have had the sort of great farewell where they were still together and they still had the fairy tale marriage and they exited the show gracefully. But now we're getting the bumps and bruises and the sort of post fairy tale and how this all affects that fairy tale. Yeah. And I don't know, it's a little bit, I don't know, Twilight Zone-y, but that's how it is.
It's like, I want to be like a Bravo social worker where I'm like, you don't have to do this, you know, like,
that's your next career.
You can. Yeah. I want to be like a counselor because I feel like maybe being around them in person gave me this like, feel for them as people, as real humans. And the Vanderpump cast has just always stuck with me as like, they're real. And I remember them being real. And so when I'm thinking about how their like real lives are impacted by the show, I have this extra like, let me be there for you.
Protectiveness.
Like, you're gonna be okay. Like, yeah.
I feel the same way interviewing these people for 8 years. It's like, that's, You have to keep that like towards the center of your mind when talking about them. But I know we got deep here today. Bridget, this is so much fun though. Like, I think I got a lot from this conversation. And where can people read your writing? You have a book coming out. You just finished.
Oh God. Well, I also have to shout out. I remember watching Housewives with your brother and friends and my sister when we were like 12. So that's like those are my formative memories in DC.
And like Greg's playroom. Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Just like watching our girls, like getting educated early from Vicki Gunvalson.
And I was in the other room with my friends. Yep. Yep.
Yes. Yes. We were trying to keep you out of it as long as possible. Yes. So I am a features writer at New York. That's where you can find me. I'm on Twitter at Bridget Gillard, which is my middle name, G-I-L-L-A-R-D. And yeah, I'm writing a book about pyramid schemes. I just finished it. So that'll come out in a year. So you'll hear more about that. Right now, it's sort of haunting me. So it's not, it'll become more exciting as it becomes real.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But this was so fun.
I get it. Oh my God, Bridget, thank you for doing this. And we'll do this again soon.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.